All right, here we go. All right, welcome everyone to the 2023 third quarter Zoom meeting, Beacon Church Collaborative Zoom meeting. We're going to continue our talk from our last, the second quarter meeting, about diving deeper. And so the title for our talk today is Diving Deeper, Continuing the Discussion on Practical Theology. So we want to just continue what David Anderson started with us when we met for the second quarter. Those of you who did not attend, do not worry. This is why we have this PowerPoint. Anna was very kind, and thank you, Anna, for putting together a PowerPoint, kind of bringing up some of the important points that were made by David in the previous meeting. So we'll be reminded, and we're not wondering, okay, I don't know what we were talking about last time. Don't worry, we're going to get started. So without any further ado, we're going to begin our talk, and Anna, get us started.
Sorry, guys, I was on mute. All right. So I think we all know each other, but I'm Anna. I'm Jackie's assistant. So as Jackie just said, we're going to review some of the key points from last meeting. And then in between each of those key points, we're going to have some discussion questions that we can dive into. Now, with those discussion questions, some of them are going to be guided toward the group as a whole, and some of them are going to be guided towards our members with disabilities so that we can gain perspective from our group members who have disabilities. There are images that will come up on the screen to indicate, but myself and other moderators will also make sure to indicate who each question is intended for as we go along. So our first step of review is why people with disabilities may not go to church. So one point that came up last time was many folks have PTSD from negative church experiences or from a family that was maybe misusing faith as a way to control. They struggle to find congregations which are accessible, both due to lack of outreach and lack of information about accessibility. Fear of being wrongly judged or simply ignored by the able-bodied church members. And often there can be the assumption that there will be resistance to having a disabled child or family member participate in Sunday school, youth activities, or other events. Also, I've seen this attitude surrounding things like church retreats or, VBS summer camp, that kind of thing. Anything where it's more than a couple minutes where the kids are going to be left with other caregivers, you notice that people will be very hesitant to trust that anyone actually has the both the etiquette and the safety training to handle those concerns. So now we have a discussion question for our members with disabilities. What are some adaptations to church schedule or liturgy that would make church more accessible to you?
I can talk if that's okay.
Oh, yes, please.
Having the hymns and the music in the bulletin instead of in tiny little print in the hymnals.
Right.
Teach other people how to help me as I become more, needing more help. It's hard to think of who I could get to help me. And I've been there for 30 years, so.
And those kinds of help can be pretty simple, right, artists? Just like pushing you in your chair or helping you eat something. It's not challenging.
No,
not challenging for the people who have a body that is able to do those things, right? Yeah. Yeah. So those are some great options. I'm just going to shift to this next screen because I typed up some of what I thought some of the common answers would be. So some of these will be ones that you guys share. And you can keep sharing more. If you have ideas that are not written on here, please share them. And if you want to dive deeper into one of the ideas on here, please share. So I added that services in both the morning and the evening can be really helpful because, like, personally for me, morning services are really hard on my body. So I'm a lot more likely to attend a service if it's offered in the evening. That's not true for everyone. Some people have the opposite with their disabilities where they feel unwell in the evening and if they have an easier time in the morning. So if churches have the ability to offer both, services, and it doesn't have to be every week. It could be like, once a month they have an evening worship service or something like that. That just creates opportunities for people who maybe couldn't participate in the traditional morning services and vice versa.
And and on this point here, because I know Crystal, this has been something that's difficult for her, both because of location of where she lives. And Crystal, in a moment, I want you to voice that as well. But I just know that some of the challenges Crystal has had because of where she lives, which is down in Federal Way, to come all the way up to the east side with access can take the bulk of her day just to get up really early, to get dressed, have breakfast, be ready for access and get to the event on time. And of course, sometimes miss it altogether. So Crystal, is there a best time if it's morning or a best time if it's evening in general for you to be able to attend? Crystal, are you muted? I don't see her muted, so I'm not sure what happened. Okay, all righty. But anyway, that is some of the things. And I think the challenge here, Jack, for your church, speak up. Paul, for yours. Kathy, for yours. But we know that we can't have, the services kind of have to be that common denominator that most people can attend at this given time. So we always know there's going to be some that it's going to be more difficult for. But I think part of addressing this is thinking outside the box that even if there's a common denominator time, like 10 in the morning or 11 in the morning, when the majority of the congregation are able to come and attend, like churches that have separate times where they have other bodies of believers, like the Hispanic population and others who go in and use your facilities, right, for their own service later. If it's something that you could consider for disability, where it's a later morning for them so that they come in and it's a service, I don't mean it's a separation because we so much don't want to do that, but I'm wondering if there's a happy medium between the two. Am I out in left field or what do you think?
In a big church like my sister goes to, they have a late 12 o'clock service.
Ah, okay. So they have an earlier one and a later one?
Yes.
Yeah, that's really nice. I think, like, ideally, when a church is able to offer a few services, that's amazing. But I've honestly, like, I appreciate it when smaller churches even just do something like once a month or once every 2 weeks or once a quarter event where they have like a worship night or a prayer night or a, just a Bible study and meditation evening or something like that. Aside from small groups, because small groups are great, but something that gets more of the congregation together, so you're not just stuck in your little clique groups, but you're actually getting to engage with other members of the congregation. And yeah, like I said, if it's a small church and you can't do it every week, that's okay. But just making an effort to have an integrated service at a different time of day that's going to be accessible to people who aren't making the mornings, that's really a great thing to do. And in that same vein, weekday and weeknight opportunities are great because a lot of people are doing their medical treatments over the weekend. So they're not feeling well. For a few several years, I was on treatments like that, and my doctors would specifically tell me, don't schedule anything on the weekend. You're just going to be sleeping, or you're going to be vomiting, or you're going to be doing both. Either way, you don't want to be at a symphony orchestra concert when that's happening. So just stay home. So a lot of people are doing things like that on weekends, which means that they might be more likely to show up to the small group that meets on a weekday, or the, you know, the prayer night that happens on a weekday or something like that. Yeah.
So Paul, before we move on, I want to tackle this just a little bit more, Anna, because I just know it is a challenge a lot of times. But Paul, in all the accessibility issues that Holy Spirit has tackled over the years, and you all have tackled a lot of them, has this been in discussion amongst your pastoral staff and your administrative staff about addressing persons with disabilities not coming early because of the time? Paul? Are you on mute?
I'm having trouble with my volume control in my speaker, so I'm having difficulty hearing you. And I'm trying to find the menu at the bottom. It's kind of my desktop bar is completely covered by something else. So I cannot hear you properly, but can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very well. And I can't believe that you're the first person who said you can't hear me.
I'm trying to fix that. I'm not all that computer savvy. Unless I shut down and come back.
Do you want to try that?
Can you exit from full screen so that you're no longer in full screen? Then you might be able to see your desktop menu.
Yeah. I have it on standard, so I'll exit full screen.
Okay. Hit escape. Sometimes that takes you out.
One second. I think I got it. No, it is. It is in full volume, but still, yeah, I have my setting, the mixer at full volume. I'm still not able to hear you properly.
Okay. I'm sorry about that, because we want you to definitely be a part of our discussion. So let us know, Paul, if you want to jump in, because you were able to hear what we were saying, but we can hear you very well. So
okay, one second. Yeah. Keep going. I'm.
Okay. All righty. Okay. So I'll jump. Jack.
Yeah. Let me pick up on Anna's question.
Okay.
We just have the one worship service at 10 o'clock, but I think it would be something to consider to have some kind of a after church fellowship gathering that folks could be included in that will come a little later. We also have our education hour before church and could possibly make that to an after church event. And if that was more convenient for folks with disabilities getting there. But I had a question regarding accessibility too, that I would be interested in a perspective on from Artis or Crystal. And that is, do you look for some type of information before you go to an event regarding accessibility? We've talked about providing that kind of information. We haven't done it. Maybe videoing a walk-in from the parking lot to being able to sit down and just have that image on our website. Would that be something that would be useful?
Yes, I think it would be my kid is accessible only now. I'm using a wheelchair more to go to church, so I'm just kind of learning what I had to do. Like they take away a chair and I put my wheelchair in that empty spot.
Yeah. I'll say it's really helpful to have specific information. So a video is great, but it's also important, especially for folks who have visual impairments, it's important that you have the information text or audio form as well. Text is fine. Usually people are able to have some sort of text to voice software that can read it for them if needed. But it's really important to also include information like how many disability accessible parking spaces you have, how many disability accessible toilets are available. Is the fire exit accessible? Information like that is helpful to include. Also, what's your air filtration system like? People who have a compromised immune system are going to be looking at what your air filtration is like and if that's safe for them to be around people in your building. So also even just including information like whether or not you tend to have small children or infants in your sanctuary or whether they're kind of delegated to their own areas during worship, because for a person who's immunosuppressed, they're probably not going to go into a church where everyone's holding their babies during worship. But if it's a church where everyone's dropped them off at a nursery, they might feel more comfortable in the sanctuary. So there's a lot of aspects to accessibility. And it's even important to advertise the things that are not. So even if you haven't been able to put in automatic door openers, make sure you're stating like, we have a ramp, but we don't have automatic door openers, or we don't have a ramp. We have three steps up to the main door, but we do have space to pace or elevate your feet at the back of the sanctuary if you have chronic pain issues, you know. So you don't have to be perfect to advertise your accommodations, and you don't have to know all the things, but it's important to communicate clearly and communicate like measurably. So like specific, you know, okay, our doorways are 35 inches wide, you know, that kind of thing really helps people.
I'm not Crystal or yeah, I wasn't one of the two people you were asking, but I would say that I always look online to see if they have any accessibility related stuff before I come into any place. So having all of that listed, the videos can actually work well as a, especially if you're wanting to invite and introduce people of different types and sizes to the church. Ours has a video right now that's not specifically for this, but it creates that welcoming space type thing. Also, if you're looking at that type of thing and what it would be like, social stories are a good way to go, and writing a social story, which includes photos about what the next step's going to be, can also be incredibly helpful for people of all types. So I've been doing a lot of social stories lately for the zoo, so that's become a lot of my
stuff. But what a great and creative idea, Jessica. That really, really is, because social stories really do speak on a more personal level about how welcoming a church is. You feel like, hey, I could be a part of that congregation. So, wow, that's never occurred to me. Thank you. Wow, how wonderful is that, really? Wow.
And
wow.
I'll add that like a lot of those short video clips that you'll see on Facebook or TikTok or different video platforms, those little stories that you'll see, or Instagram, a lot of the disability community has really dove into those platforms as ways to network with each other about spaces that are safe, about spaces that are accessible, about products that are helpful or accessible. And so you'll find a real wealth of disability community in those spaces. And so you can also learn a lot. So even if you're just trying to gain inspiration about how to do one of those videos, you can start looking at some other social media accounts and see what's helpful for other people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I throw in a couple of things? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I still very feebly hear you, but still. We did about 5, 6, 7 years ago, we tried the kind of a midweek. There are several activities for the entire congregation, but some of us thought that a small group with disability inclusion in mind should gather and just chat about it. I, you know, not a very serious agenda, but just throw ideas and talk about it and see what comes out of it. And excepting two or three of us, the others did not want anything like that. It's almost to say, we have a formula, we'll apply that to you, rather than discuss and see what comes out of it that would help them enhance what they are providing. That's one thought I want to share. The other thing is just a thought. I was wondering if a couple of, if not all churches are accessible, a couple of churches can cooperate, like a church close to my church. We can develop some kind of a partnership. Mm-hmm. And our church is so big, we don't have to meet in the sanctuary. We can meet in the basement or in one of the classrooms. So if there is a church that does not have accessibility, then can two or three churches get together and have a worship? It could be just a start. We are not there to advocate that. We want every church to be accessible. But in the meanwhile, or if not for the worship, at least for a midweek discussion or something like that, mm-hmm. can a couple of churches get together? So that's one thought that's going through my mind.
Yeah. I love that idea, Paul. That's great. So I'm just going to breeze through these next few ones that are just ones that I've heard amongst my loved ones who have disabilities, who have been involved with church, and what I've heard expressed as wishes, desires, or joys when it's been done well. So something that some folks appreciate is just a quick warning before loud worship songs or clapping are going to happen, or even just before worship in general. Say, okay, we're going to have some music time now. So like, I've noticed it's been a trend at a lot of churches where they'll just kind of ease into doing some music, you know, they just, somebody gets up there and starts playing guitar. And it's beautiful. It sounds wonderful. And to, I think, folks who are neurotypical or don't have any sensory processing disabilities, that's probably a great time. But for a lot of people, it becomes really overwhelming because they weren't prepared for that transition in both liturgy and sound. And now they're overwhelmed and they're too overwhelmed to figure out where the quiet place was they could go. Whereas if they had a warning, they could have gone into the quiet room before the music happened, before they got overwhelmed. So that's just a really respectful thing to do if you're going to be doing anything that's loud or kind of changing acoustically what's going on with your liturgy. Also, a liturgy that does not rely on physically getting up and down frequently. Personally, with my chronic pain, I get really stiff sometimes. So when I've gone to churches where you're up to sing a song and then you're down to say a prayer and then you're up to do this and then you're down to do that and then you're up to do this and then you're down to do that, I am in pain. And by halfway through the service, I'm sitting through all of it and people are giving me side eye because I didn't care enough about that song to stand up and worship, or I didn't care enough to stand up and shake the hand of the person next to me, or this, that, or the other. And they don't realize that it's that or my knees today. Like, you know, it's not, I'm not doing it because I'm in a grumpy attitude. If I was in a grumpy attitude, I wouldn't have shown up at all, right? So it's not to say that you can't ask people to stand during worship or that you can't have people sit or kneel during prayer. Those are fine. It's fine to posture your body, but it's really important that you foster a culture in your congregation that isn't pressuring people or making them feel like their faith is inadequate when they can't do those things. So, or making them feel like they're pressured to do something that's hurting their body, because we all know that God doesn't want you to blow out your knees to pray. That would be ridiculous. But a lot of people end up feeling that kind of social pressure in church and injuring their bodies needlessly because of the social pressure. So it's just important to consider those things when we're doing posturing for worship and prayer.
And on those thoughts too, you know, because it is a sense of inclusion, you know, Anna, that when it's saying to clap and you can't clap, because you don't have use of your hands. When it's saying, let's stand up or stomp your feet and you can't, you don't feel included. You feel like, well, okay, when the song gets over with, I'll wait for the next song kind of a thing. And the other thing I remember, because I didn't realize this, I was in that ignorant group, mm-hmm. is I remember Paul, this is about you, so I hope you can hear me. I remember Paul sharing in a video we
I'm trying to hear. Ago,
okay, where he said that when people come in and they are chair users, right? And they come in and they're many times seated toward the back in the corner, so they can easily get in and out and not block people and whatever reasons those are. Then when everybody stands up, well, what do they see? They see everyone's backside. That's all they see. And it really, I thought to myself, unless you actually are sitting down and experience that for yourself, or think about it, people want to come, artists, I think you know how it is when you said making a space for you so you can be up there closer to the front and see everything and not someone else's backside because they stood up in front of you and you cannot stand up with them. So again, that's a sense of not being included. It's a sense of being excluded unintentionally, but still those are the things that that we need to start to be aware of as church congregations.
And a really inclusive way to phrase it could just be, take whatever posture you feel moved to or feels like an act of devotion to you, or, whatever spiritual posture you're trying to guide the congregation to, focus on that. So, okay, however you feel you need to hold your body to humble yourself right now, do that. However you feel you need to hold your body to worship, to express joy, do that right now. And for some people, they'll be dancing, they'll be excited, right? Awesome. And for some people, they'll stay sitting down because that's what their bodies can do. And that's also fine because their heart might be up and dancing. And that's valid. And God sees their heart. That's what's important to him. So as a church, we need to have that same attitude of trusting that God sees everyone's hearts and that we don't have to look uniform in a certain way to have adequate worship. On that same note, when you're doing things like communion or certain kinds of prayer rituals, consider accessibility. I've seen churches that have done these sorts of things in a way that, unintentionally excludes people who either can't walk to the front of the congregation or have dietary restrictions or who... maybe they're assuming that the only people who aren't able to walk to the front of the congregation are the ones with wheelchairs. And so those are the only ones they bring and, they walk out their communion to. And there's plenty of people who just had to stay sitting because their feet hurt or they're holding a toddler or whatever, right? So there just needs to be organization, consistency, and communication about how these things are done. And there needs to be an anonymous space for congregants to share when they can't engage with these types of ministries or these types of sacraments so that they can share, hey, you guys had communion last week and I didn't get any. can we work on this? But to make it a place where they can share that anonymously so they don't feel like they're singling themselves out, especially in small faith communities, that can cause a lot of drama. And so it's important to have something like maybe just a space in the church bulletin where people can share their concerns about accessibility or about feeling included. So that's definitely an aspect, is you can't necessarily know what you're doing that's hurting people or inaccessible to them unless they're able to share with you what would be better. So making space for that really helps. And then also a thing that can help is sharing the liturgy in advance on the website or in a bulletin every week. So folks who have, especially neurodivergent folks, but folks with certain sort of cognitive ways that their brains work, a lot of people, routine and structure is very important to them. And so if they go to church and they're expecting it to go one way and it's a different schedule, that might be enough to make them have a really hard day for the rest of the day. They might have a hard time eating after that or a hard time transitioning into the other activities they needed to do for the rest of the day. And so a really respectful way to recognize and honor that God makes brains work in a lot of wonderful and mysterious ways is to share the liturgy in advance so people can know, oh, this week we're actually going to have longer worship. Oh, this week we have a guest speaker, and they're going to talk at a different time during the service, so they can prepare themselves for that in advance and not feel overwhelmed and like it's thrown their whole day into disarray.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we've kind of stopped printing bulletins, you know, kind of to save the paper sort of strategy, but I realize that for those that are there all the time, you sort of know what's coming, but for guests, it leaves them a little surprised at each step of the way, I think. So it might be good to have a limited set of printed bulletins for guests in particular.
Yes.
Yeah, appreciate that suggestion.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful thing, is especially if you have the same schedule every time, you could probably even reuse bulletins, especially if it's not having announcements in it that are changing seasonally. And yeah, and if it's just guests are using them, you can reuse them. And so there's no need to be going through copious amounts of paper just to accommodate this, but it can be very helpful to a lot of people. Yeah.
And also, if things are digitally on the website or somewhere, then people with either in devices to enlarge, visually impaired people who need to enlarge stuff or use or have it transposed by their devices into Braille can read it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. So lots of reasons it's really helpful to have the liturgy on the website. And so with that, in that vein, it sounds like, Jessica, you'd also love it if that included like the lyrics for the hymns for that.
Yes, please. I would love, yeah. I start, yeah. And I was told it's too expensive, so it's too much work, too much of a hassle. But the reality is that includes people who struggle with opening and navigating a hymnal. It's not just people who are visually impaired. It really is.
It helps people who are dyslexic. It helps people with all kinds of impairments, definitely. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's a really helpful thing that can be done. And then the last thing I put on here that we kind of hit on a moment ago, which is just give advanced warning if there's going to be infants or young children that are going to be present in the sanctuary or in an event where it's not really clear that it's, you know, obviously if it's vacation Bible school, you're kind of expecting kids to be there because it's a kids event. But if it's going to just be a church meeting or a worship service or something like that where it's ambiguous, if you are going to have kids there, make sure and share it. Or if you're intending for there not to be kids there, or you have a childcare option available there, make sure that you're communicating those things so that immunocompromised individuals can gauge whether it's a safe event for themselves, and also so that families can too. It helps them figure out, oh, you guys have childcare? So I don't actually have to figure out if I can afford a babysitter before I can go to this church meeting. It'll help them know too. So actually a lot of accommodations that help people with disabilities help families with young children too. It kind of goes both ways. So this was just a point that David Anderson made at the last meeting that I just kept in here because I thought it was relevant. Change is needed not because someone with a disability is already present, but so that someone with a disability can be present. Most people with disabilities, like Jessica said, we're looking online about accommodations before we go somewhere to see if it's safe for us to even be there, to see if we're going to be able to get in the door, if we're going to be able to use the restroom, if we're going to be trapped inside if there's a fire. And so if we can't find that information, we're not going to show up. And so these changes need to be made so people will even start showing up. It's not enough to have this attitude of, oh, we'll start to do this thing once the people who need it start coming, because they'll never come until it's done. Mm-hmm. So here we have some scriptures that David Anderson pointed out to us. I think a lot of them will be familiar, and so that's why he kind of put key phrases from each of these scriptures here. So we have 2 Corinthians 5:20, which is about being Christ's ambassadors and representing sort of his presence in the world, his attitude. Romans 8:16 and 1 John 3:1-2 are about being children of God, and having identity in that, and also sort of familial obligations because of that. Mm-hmm. Matthew 28:18-20 is about taking the gospel to all people groups, which people tend to translate as being different nationalities, but it can mean any group. And really, we see God focusing on marginalized groups. One of the largest marginalized groups is people with disabilities. So perfectly relevant here. Philippians 2:4-5, which is about having the same attitude as Christ. And what do we see Christ doing over and over and over again? Treating people with disabilities like equals, hanging out, you know, sharing meals, talking, cracking jokes, doing people stuff. So that's what we're supposed to do. Really just be compassionate and nice people. It's pretty like a fun task to get, actually. He's like, hey, go be nice to people, hang out. Okay, that's not hard. Luke 10:25-27, who is my neighbor? I think we all know how Jesus answered that one. Everyone, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And Matthew 25:40, Jesus says, whatever you do to the least of these, meaning the societally kind of low or neglected, whatever you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. And whatever you haven't done to the least of these, you haven't done for me. So if you neglect people, you're neglecting me. If you're helping people, you're helping me. If you're actively going out of your way to hurt them, you're actively going out of your way to hurt me. Just drawing your attention back to the fact that all people, even vulnerable people, are creations of God, children of God that he values as very important. And he does take it personally when you start hurting his children. So that's what that verse is about there. John 13:12-17, about I have set an example. Yes, he did so many stories about interacting with people with disabilities. All throughout scripture, and especially in the New Testament, it's very clear that God is making a point that we're seeing these examples so we can learn. And 2 Corinthians 3:3, you are a letter from Christ, which is in that same vein of being Christ's ambassadors and having the same attitude of if people are going to get to know Jesus, it's going to be through us. And so we better be accurately representing that. And Jesus, you know, gets really upset when we do things like picking favorites or being discriminatory, things like that. And then we have Colossians 3:12-14, which says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you, and over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. All right, I know we've got one more slide of scriptures here, and I promise there's a purpose for this. So these are still the ones that David brought up during our last session. And these are some biblical examples of how God values our weakness. And so we have Abraham and Sarah, Joseph, Moses, Gideon, the widow with some flour and oil to sustain Elijah in 1 Kings, the young girl to point Naaman to Elisha in 2 Kings, and a little child to teach the disciples humility in Matthew 18. And then, of course, we have David, Mary, and Jesus' disciples. And this quote from book called Disability in the Gospel says, God's story in scripture uses these characters to highlight their weakness, their inability, and their brokenness. And in so doing, God's glory and God's grace are magnified all the more. So, considering these scriptures and Bible stories that we just reviewed from last session, did you gain any new perspectives on any of them since joining this discussion group? So it could be something that you learned last session and didn't get to share, or it could be something that you just considered when we were going over these scriptures just now. And this is a question for everyone, not just our members with disabilities.
Um, I don't know, maybe this the subject that I'm thinking of people with speaking abilities, like I love to talk and I want to talk to a stranger. It does not go over very well, so I'm wondering if I need to just say hi, what's your name, and leave it at that.
You know, artist, I feel that some of that experience of yours is because people feel uncomfortable. Do I understand everything she said? Did I misunderstand? What should I say? Should I not? And that's, you know, I don't want to put that as a judgmental thing so much as the fact that that is just a natural way that many times we respond to those that we see as different than us, right? Yes. And a disability that we don't have a personal experience with, family member or others, where we've gotten comfortable, we understand it, it's a part of our world. And so of course, I want to encourage you, don't let that keep you from being the artist that you are and inducing yourself with people, because when you boldly introduce yourself and maybe tell them a little something about your church, if that's where you're meeting them, or you're glad they came to church that day, that's going to start to break that barrier and sort of that icy, oh gosh, you know, I'll sit over here so I'm not over there, and she might talk to me and I might not know what to say. Don't stop that boldness, because, you know, artists, we need that. That is the whole point of what we're doing. Even looking at theology, that God has created us all, and we're all valuable and very much loved children of God, all of us. And so we should be accepting of one another. And, you know, I wanted to share also, because Crystal's doing chat with us, so I just wanted to read what Crystal had shared. She said, since God owns the cattle on 1,000, the church should pay any price to lovingly include someone. So I think, Crystal, what you're saying here is God has created all things, all people, just as they are, beautiful as they are, and we should embrace them all. And that is correct theology. That is true and correct theology. And many times when we read these scriptures that Anna just showed, we want to read it through our very abled vision and not just think of all people, all people. You know, that's what God's, everyone's a neighbor, right? Everyone. Yeah. And so no one's excluded. No one is excluded. And we need to see that bigger picture.
I'm going to add one thing here, artists, is just, I know something that, and you're not obligated to do this at all, but if you're talking to someone and they look like they're afraid that they can't hear you, or they've misunderstood you, and they don't know what to do, and they look nervous and clueless, I'm sure you've seen that face. I think we've all seen it sometimes. So if that happens, you can definitely reassure them and tell them, you know, do you need me to repeat myself? It's okay to ask me to repeat myself. Because I think those of us who are familiar with disability etiquette, we know that the polite thing is to actually hear what you're saying. I'd rather embarrass myself and ask three times and actually know what you're saying than pretend that I know what you're saying and smile and nod and have no idea, right? It's better to ask. But people who aren't familiar with disability etiquette, they might not know that. They might be really afraid of offending you if they ask you to repeat yourself, because they don't know that you understand that as a limitation and you're prepared to repeat yourself. So sometimes just making a small disclaimer like that with somebody who looks nervous can really break the ice and help them to feel comfortable continuing the conversation. But you're also not obligated to accommodate ignorance. And if a person's being awful, you can definitely just save your energy for a conversation with someone else. That's okay.
So,
don't ever feel like you're obligated to just educate a bunch of ignorant people while you're just trying to live your life. It's okay to just live your life sometimes and, you know, deal with that. So
So, Kathy, I know you've been on mute and you might want to just be a listener, but I'm calling you out because Kathy has been married a long time, several years with Bridge, but she's also engaged in a very personal one-on-one relationships with a couple of our guardianship clients, which are developmentally disabled persons. So they have challenges. So, Kathy, from your perspective, on seeing them really as friends that you go and love to spend time with and do things with, what would you suggest for those of us who aren't sure, gosh, can I do that? Would I be able to do that? And would I do it well?
It's just my personality to be able to interact more comfortably one-on-one than in groups. And I know the very first time though that I met one of the ladies, it was challenging. It was just challenging because I didn't kind of know how to talk to her really. And but we persisted. I think, your point about being bold and keep going with it, and really just challenging other people with, like artists was, just keep challenging people to listen and understand. I think that's so important, and it's important on an able person's side to, be moved enough and interested enough in God's child to put in the effort and to try to figure out what this other person needs and wants from you as a friend, and be that friend.
Yeah. So, Kathy, have you seen for those two ladies that you have really had that long-term relationship with, have you seen a real differential from when you started a few years ago to where you are today in their relationship?
Yeah, I do. I think that there's a trust level there that happens over time, and of course, whenever you are a friend to somebody for a long period of time, pretty soon you have those little jokes between you two that it kind of help make that relationship so special and just sustain the friendship so well. Yeah, I enjoy both of them so much. They're both very different. Yeah, we have a lot of fun, and I'm so glad I did it. So glad, and that they continued to want to see me. It's just nice. Yeah, I don't know if that
Thank
answers your question.
you.
It
Yes,
does.
it
Beautiful.
tells me two key aspects of love that we see from Corinthians, right? Patience and perseverance. Those were the two things that I was thinking while you were sharing, was that you were nervous at first, but you kept going and you had the attitude for it and it blossomed, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for
That's what
sure.
the Holy Spirit can do with each of us. We don't have to have any special skills for God to do that with us.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, can I add something to what Kathy said? I do understand the discomfort some people have talking to a person with a disability or a different situation. And I try my best to make that other person comfortable, but I think my background and training is such I could do that. And I do also understand the discomfort other people feel. Like once I was introduced to a young man who had only two fingers and a thumb in his right hand. So I was introduced, I put out my hand to shake his hands, and what do I feel? I don't feel, there's a total hollow there. And it felt so strange for me. And I'm sure it showed on my face. And I'm sure that other guys saw on what was happening. But I just couldn't ignore the funny feeling of shaking hands with somebody with only two fingers and a thumb. I just couldn't avoid it. So when I look at somebody who hesitates to talk to me, or the usher brings the in the old churches, they have the collection plate comes along. They come near me and they just freeze. So I smile and nod and said, okay, I can also, there's so many small, small things that happen that could make a person, it is very difficult to completely change that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we can teach. I even had issue with a usher. He didn't know how to handle. So the training ushers becomes even more important.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, as I told my pastor, and I might have told Jackie also, I know how to handle it. If I'm very selfish, I'll handle my situation and I'll keep going. But I want the majority of the people, to feel comfortable interacting with people with disabilities, mm-hmm. and providing the basic access they want. So how we go about it, mm-hmm. it's a big thing.
Yeah, you've expressed to me in the past, Paul, that if you have a negative experience at your church, it's not going to shatter your faith. You're going to think, oh, that person from my church had an off day, right? Or they didn't know, they were ignorant about that thing. But if a person who has no faith or a completely undeveloped and new faith comes into a church and has an experience like that, it might completely turn them off to having a faith at all, to having a relationship with God at all. And you shared that concern with me that, it doesn't hurt you too much. You can handle having one of those days where you're frustrated, but it hurts you to think that another member of the disability community might come in, might come to your church and have an experience like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it really does take people with disabilities being part of the church in order for people to become acclimated. There's still, even though the ADA is now 33 years old and Section 5 is, I forget what the numbers are, but it's still, and then the church is a whole other thing. So just expecting that people with disabilities are going to be involved members of the church is still such a foreign concept. But I was thinking about, I watched Crip Camp the other day, and I was realizing a lot of my understanding about disabilities came from the 80s when my grandparents had a group home for people with disabilities and adopted that went to Rainier School and adopted my aunt who has cerebral palsy, and realizing that that is part of very much who I am is because that was my experience from a very, very young age. And as somebody who's part of the guide dog community, I'm now seeing parents who actually grew up understanding what service dogs now teaching their kids in a different way.
Yes.
But it's still not a normalized part of church community. And that's it. And the only way that that's going to change is for people with disabilities to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And great bringing up the guide dogs, because like my fiance's grandmother, she is blind and she uses a seeing eye dog, and she has had several seeing eye dogs over the years because she's had vision impairments for most of her life. So I've witnessed many times her at church with her guide dog. And what do I witness? Without fail, almost every time, someone, usually a kid, but sometimes even an adult, coming up, petting the dog, talking to the dog, distracting the dog, trying to give a snack to the dog, doing so many different things that could endanger this woman who's relying on this dog to make sure she doesn't crash into a chair or a wall or trip over a cord or, whatever. This dog is making sure she's safe in a space that's not always familiar to her because they rearrange the chairs and things. So, but people don't realize that they're being disrespectful. They think, oh, cute puppy, you know, and they think they're doing something nice, and they don't realize that it, you know, some people have a guide dog to detect seizures, and if you distract their dog, it could really endanger them and they could fall and hit their head, you know? So there's definitely a lot of awareness and education that needs to come about that. Great thing to bring up. Now, this is we've really nicely eased into this next question, guys. Good job. So have any of you began to introduce inclusive teaching into your congregations? Now, this could be as simple as keeping inclusive books in your children's church or library. It could be a Bible study group following the Disabled and Devoted devotional that we've been putting out through Bridge. Or it could even be as complex as a full sermon series that a pastor has dove into. It could look like a lot of different things, but I'd just love to hear what your churches have begun to do.
Our church used to, and then we have an interim and things changed. But our church, and one of the reasons why I came to the church, they actually had an inclusivity welcoming statement at the beginning of the time. So it said something like, Anglican worship is full of movement. We stand, sit, kneel at different times throughout the service. And then it said, we will not be announcing what movement to use because we trust that you know how to best use your body to worship. And that, I think, was huge. And it's something that I definitely see in the church that I'm in now. And I'm headed off to seminary, and I'm really excited to start, you know, using disability theology in sermons.
Great. So Jessica, what do you think was the reason, you may not know, but when the church was very much at the forefront of inclusive language and welcome, and then you said a new, you know, pastorate or whatever came in and it all changed.
Yeah.
Was it just because perhaps the incoming pastors didn't maybe embrace disability in the same way?
I think that she doesn't embrace a welcoming at all in the same way, because she also refused to do our land acknowledgement, which at the beginning, which was also part of it. So I think it was I think it's a multiple. She's an interim priest, and we're just accepting that is where things are at this moment. And, there's been other people voicing frustration that we're missing that now. And stuff. I think it's just an interim, and part of interims are also teaching people that other priests do things differently so that you can transition into a priest and not be all upset because they turn things upside down because each one's different. But yeah, that was a core identity that our parish has. Regardless of, you know, things that could be changed to make it better. And so, yeah, that was, I think, basically what it was. She just doesn't like welcome. And it wasn't something that she embraced the whole thing. So, yeah.
Okay.
And I
only say that because I know that when we get to our conference in October, that's one of the things we're going to tackle, which is church leadership, pastors. Because, you know, it comes from the leadership down. And from if the leadership is impassioned for disability, for inclusion, understanding what that means, or even just willing to learn with the congregation what that means, and then embrace it as a part of their ministry to the community, right? All community, not specifically singling out disability, but you're serving all community. Then then I feel like that when you're asking a question like, are there these things being introduced, it's got to start there. It really does. And it's, and pastors having that passion, or us going and really hopefully lighting that passion within our own ministers in the church, like, hey, can we do something like this?
Right. And I think, you know, our search is definitely going to be looking for somebody who is welcoming it and accepting to those things as we go through the elongated search process. But yeah, it's just, it was one of those things where our St. Andrew's is about welcoming everybody, and that is kind of their thing. And so those that land acknowledgement that we took active work in actually developing relationships, and then also the anti-ableist, and then all of the sit stand and all of that had been removed from the bulletin, and then it was put in, and those types of things. They've been a challenge, but it's in some ways that pushback is really making people think, I think, and we're trying to be respectful, but also think, okay, this does mean something to us. This isn't just words we're saying. Yeah. And so I'm hoping to grab that fire and be able to really work with inclusion as, because I'm going to need my projects as I go through seminary. And yeah, so, but yeah, right now we have a little bit of a roadblock. Yeah.
Okay. Is that St. Andrews, Jessica? Which is your church?
St. Andrews, Seattle.
Okay. Now, let me just add on changes. We just hired a new pastor, a great 40-year-old woman, and she has the tradition of signing the benediction at the end of the service, which is a kind of a neat, maybe more of a symbolism that there might be those that didn't hear it all. I mean, it's not like the whole service has signing, but I think it's a little heads up and really adds a little reminder to all of us of that, as well as making a very great message in and of itself.
Yes.
Very nice.
It's showing that she knows sign, so it's letting audience members know that if they need somebody to take up a conversation with, that she might be a person they can do that.
Yeah.
That's great. Do we have anyone else wanting to share what their congregations have done, or do we want the next question?
Well, we're at 3:10, so I think we're
all right. I'll go to the next question. So, have any of you adopted leadership training in your congregation so that leaders understand disability theology?
Do you have resources for that?
Yes. Well, so we have book recommendations as well as like etiquette and other sort of resources like that. So we have some resources that are available if you need like a etiquette training PowerPoint or something like that.
Yeah. You get to know.
And there are persons within the community like David Anderson who really are good at teaching. And have written books very relevant and speak very strongly to the church in a meaningful way. So in this area, to answer your question, yeah, I think there's a lot of resources that can be made available. What the other part of that is that you can make the resources available, but then you've got to do something with them, right? You've got to commit to doing something with them for your church to really have a meaningful change in its culture. When you are wanting to include all people, right? Because theologically, that's what we've been talking about, is all people are included, right? Because all people are created by God.
Yeah, at Newport Presbyterian, in the past, we've had some usher training and greeter training, and I think it's time for us to revisit that. We've had probably 100% turnover from the time that was done, and just having both the greeters at the door and the ushers aware of some of the uniqueness of greeting and welcoming and assisting people with disabilities. So thanks for the reminder. We'll get that on somebody's agenda. We're kind of restructuring, but we'll get there.
Okay. Great. It can definitely be one of those work in progress things. And it's not something that's going to happen overnight, because I understand that a leadership training also involves finding or developing a curriculum for that, finding the resources for it, and also scheduling the time when you can actually get all the leaders together at once, which can be a feat in itself. So this isn't to pass judgment on anyone who hasn't been able to do this yet.
No.
This is just for us to really hear your ideas about what you've tried. You know, what's worked well, what hasn't worked well. Do you have questions about it, or do you have ideas about it?
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep things moving unless anyone has something really pressing.
Yeah.
So this is, how could we adapt leadership training, and how might this reflect for Sunday school teachers and prayer team training? So this is just really just considering that you can really expand this. It doesn't just have to be your ushers. It can be your pastors, your Sunday school teachers, your prayer team. People with disabilities experience hurt and social faux pas at every layer of church leadership and organization. Unfortunately, I wish it wasn't true, but I think especially it's really common with prayer teams, but also, you know, kids in Sunday school have a hard time. I had a hard time in youth group as a teenager when my disabilities were onsetting. We're doing really active events, and I was treated like I was a mopey, silky teenager if I couldn't run fast and do the running events with all the other kids. So there's a lot of areas in church culture that this can be addressed. And in every layer of that, it's really important for leaders to be aware of it so that when they see congregants being judgmental or when they see kids starting to bully each other, that they can step in, and so that they themselves aren't setting standards that are unrealistic, so that they aren't seeing a disabled person ask for prayer and just assume that it's for healing when the disabled person was actually going to ask for prayer about finding a new apartment or, you know, a prayer because they got in an argument with their sister, you know, and it wasn't even about their disability. So just think about that as you guys are thinking about leadership training. Think about all the different directions that can branch off into.
And do think about, too, that that's the whole point of our collaborative, why it was even created. But I also want to encourage everyone in this meeting today that, you know, our conference in October, encourage your leadership, your pastor, your co-pastor, perhaps it's your caring and community pastor, and maybe that's that person's focus of ministry for your church congregation. Invite them. You'll get information about it. But the whole point is for us not just to talk, but to give answers, to give some guidance, to encourage, so that your church, even if it's just those little baby steps that your church is making, that it's still making some steps in the, in that direction, as opposed to just talking and everybody having a chance to say something and then we go away and nothing changes.
You can invite people like your children's ministries coordinator or your worship leader or your choir director. It doesn't just have to be pastors. So a lot of options there. So here's just a quick review slide from last session about how often the church confuses a cure with healing. And a cure is the permanent eradication of a disease or disability. It's something that Jesus did do in his time on earth. And many denominations believe that these types of miracles still happen. And there's nothing, you know, we're not diving into that, right? That's something that can be really personal beliefs for people. But the important thing that is in common across all Christian denominations is that it's clear in the Bible that Jesus does not promise everyone with a disability that they'll be healed. It's not scriptural promise to be healthy or able-bodied on earth. And Jesus did not cure everybody he met who had a disability. Some people with disabilities he was just friends with. He just spent time together. So it's really important to be aware of those scriptural truths, and that healing often is used to represent a change in relationship and is still a kind of healing that we can ask for and, you know, won't be hurtful to ask for. Healing can be in your relationship with God, or healing can be in your relationship with other people. Healing can happen in a lot of different ways. It can even be in your relationship with yourself. So that's that. So
can I say something really quick on the previous previous slide? Is it possible to go back to the previous one? Okay. The third bullet point, everyone with disability or chronic illness does not have to be cured. It is not a scriptural promise. Okay. Then healing is change in relationship. And the healing, I have experienced that again and again and again.
Amen.
I never got a cure.
Yes.
That's difficult for some people to understand. You know, I mean, even a word said by somebody could heal you.
Yes.
And you take that and find healing. it doesn't sh say that you're not, that's a blemish on your faith. You know, the thing is, faith as defined is something. So then I say, hey, so and so touched, and I felt the healing. I mean, it's very difficult to explain unless I tell a big couple of long stories. It is difficult to, but it is only for the person who got healed to say, yes, I found healing. You cannot look at me saying, oh, he got healing because so and so said a kind word or some encouraging words. I mean, it is a very, very strange, but I would say it is a very sacred thing. You know, a very, very saintly woman. She was 80 years old. I was only 10 years old. She touched me. Did I feel anything at the time? Maybe not, but I do. Do I feel it now? Yes, I do.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So
Okay, so
I have
then
a list of people who have touched me,
thank
and
you. Thank you, Paul.
this is very important
Okay,
for
so
people to realize.
Anna, we're at 20 after, and I
Okay.
want to make sure we do end on time.
Yes.
So I don't think we're going to have time for more discussion. So we'll move on. Paul, we like to end everyone with just having a chance for a little devotional, especially from our Spiritual Connections Vision team. Paul has accepted that invitation to share a little bit with us. So I want to make sure that we end. And by the way, I think Anna will say, since we're not getting through all the slides, if this is something you would like for us to send you, like PDF to your email, we'll make that available so you can go back and catch up on the slides we couldn't get to. Now, on the upside, we had a great conversation. The downside, we couldn't finish everything, but that's okay because it means we had a lot to share and
Well,
say.
and you know what? It means that we'll have a lot to dive into during our conference.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So,
So, Paul, I think you were going to share a document yourself, right?
but can I just, this is our conclusion slide. Can we just do our conclusion slide real quickly?
Very quickly, Anna.
Yeah. So this is just a quick summing up. How do we become an inclusive church? Build and maintain caring relationships. Regularly share teaching that affirms the value of people with disabilities. Invite people with disabilities to lead, serve, and contribute in a variety of ways. Welcome different ways of worship, for example, different body language. Invite people with disabilities to events, retreats, and meetings. And do not gossip or pass judgment on unexpected behaviors, and be ready to refute gossip when you hear it. Trust that God knows the hearts of others.
He does. And go ahead and this is going to be our shameless plug because we want
Yes.
you all to be a part of it. So this is, of course, the conference coming up. All of the first three meetings, first quarter, second quarter, and this one are meant for that downward slide straight into the conference. So we are going to tackle inclusive faith, but from three perspectives, which we kind of touched on today, and that is leadership, and it is theology, and it's also congregational. Who are we as members in our congregation? How are we participating or not participating in making inclusive our churches inclusive and the faith experience of
Yeah.
persons with disabilities feel that they are part of everything that's happening within your church?
So this will be on Tuesday, October 24th at Holy Spirit Lutheran Church from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Registration's going to open at the end of August. And it'll be an online registration, so stay tuned. The title of our conference workshop is called Inclusive Faith, a comprehensive workshop on disability theology, church leadership, and culture. And we're also going to have a lot of available promotional materials for this. So if you feel like your church would like to have a poster for this on a bulletin board, or some flyers for it, or some content to just give to your leaders, just let us know, and we can get that ready for you. And you might have to come pick it up at the bridge office, but we'll have it all printed and made and ready for you. So.
And again, we really encourage you to invite those that are really a part of this whole process, like the small group leader and the co-pastors and the pastor. Because it's going to be a workshop. We are really going to have a time of learning and discussion together. So encourage you all to be a part of that. Okay. All right. So I think, Anna, we're going to take this down. And then, Paul, the sharing is up. If you wanted to go ahead, I think Paul had his own Word document, Anna, that he was going to pop up and share.
Can Anna give me permission to?
Yeah, you already. I have. As long as I've got sharing, you're good to go.
So I'll try to be as brief as possible, even though I tend to talk. I'm a storyteller. So I'm a storyteller, and I use biblical truths and biblical teaching in my storytelling. I saw a woman standing at a far corner of the fellowship hall, and she told me that, are we okay? Yeah. And she told me that she didn't know anything about Christ's teaching. So I told her, oh, it is very simple. I made it simple, but I know theologically it's much more heavier. So I simply said, oh, Jesus simply said, come. And Jesus said, go. I'm not able to scroll my document.
Okay, so we can't do it. That's in your control. So Paul, but just keep going. We see this part. So you just keep going so we can glean what you want to share with us.
There might be a scroll bar on the side that you can click on.
No, it's not showing. Maybe I should not have full screen. Okay. So Jesus said, come, and Jesus said, go. And there was a small, brief discussion. I just explained her what I just said. And who does God, who does Jesus said, come? All those who are in labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take your yoke upon me and learn of me. So all those are spiritual things, but I tend to take that kind of an invitation for those who have a burden. It could be spiritual at all or physical. So I, in my storytelling, I do deal with spiritual matters, but I also sell the physical difficulty that I face. So the there is that the heaviness of being a disabled person, there is that burden, but sometimes that burden is increased by others who lay more weight on you. It could be by their words, their looks, or their actions. So it is kind of a difficult way, especially when you're a child, to have the knowledge of the natural sin and the burden of natural sin versus the burden of being a disabled person. So that is, the awareness is there, but it is not anyway relieved by some people, by the actions of some people. So anyway, irrespective of the time where we live or culture or country, there is the burden of growing up or living with physical disability and also being isolated. Isolation is a terrible thing. And we see Jesus was isolated. And sometimes he sought solitude, a seclusion, or some silence to pray, to get away from the crowd and perhaps to mourn, like he did when John the Baptizer died. Jesus was isolated, and the best example is what he said from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? This is the worst kind of isolation. And I like a certain hymn by John Stainer. He says, Jesus was scorned and forsaken. He was derided and cursed. See how his enemies do their worst. Yet in the midst of the torture and shame, Jesus the crucified bleeds my name. So Jesus came into the world to remove our burden of sin. And then we are struggling with that, but he himself was cursed and put to death. What comforts me in this song is Christ bearing our pains and sorrow makes our burdens light. And Jesus breathing my name, that gives me a lot of comfort. There were times when the difficulty of growing up, how I found God, so when you're a child, 4, 5, 6 years old, you're suddenly struck with the whole body paralysis, then a whole lot of things go through my mind, and I struggled with that. So as a child, I couldn't even speak well because my thoughts were so crowded. And some of the things that happened around me, I just couldn't understand. But then that brought a lot of frustration and anger and some kind of a bitterness. So in the nights I used to struggle a lot trying to go to sleep. And one day, I don't know how it happened. One day, I told myself, be calm. I told myself, be calm, there is God. I didn't ask what all God's qualifications or what all God could do. I didn't ask that at all. But I simply spoke to myself and say, I told myself, come on, be calm and be restful. There is a God. And then who this God is? Yes, he's almighty. He's powerful. He's in control. He's in love. He's the king. He's the shepherd. He's the rock. And all that didn't matter. For me, feeling the presence of God was sufficient. What am I going to get out of it? I never asked. So that kind of a comfort I got, that kind of a realization of a God, and then God gently revealing himself was a very, very great comfort, especially when you're in isolation and you don't have many people to talk to. Then the presence of God, the feeling that the God is near you and that he can hear you, gave me great, great comfort. That's one of the things that helped me to cope up with my disability and not being able to go to school until I was 14 or 15, and all the isolation and social isolation I faced, all those things. There was one constant element, the presence of God. So that was a great comfort. Even though I told myself, be calm and rest, there is God. Later in life, I learned that verse from Psalm 46, be still and know that I'm God. So yes, I didn't go through, I did go through a lot of difficulties. It was a different country, different culture, a different era, but that is true in many other places also. The other day, I went and sat next to a person who was disabled, and she was in a wheelchair, and she a complicated wheelchair. And when I sat next to her, she said, "You don't mind sitting next to me? I'm also in a wheelchair." I said, "Why? Why do you ask that?" She said, "A lot of people don't like to sit next to me." You see the little inner struggle she might have, or a thought that nagging her, that people didn't want to sit next to her. And for me, it didn't make a difference. So that is one thing I always tell, no matter who it is, no matter who it is, who the deformity is or the disability is, they're also people. And accepting them is something like just sitting next to them, nodding at them, smiling at them, say hello to them. How often we do that? I mean, yes, we are discussing the deeper theology of inclusion, but there are simple acts which each one of us can do. So that is one thing I want to share. And then what Jesus says about the light. And Jesus said, I am the light of the world. If you follow me, so Jesus said, I'm the light of the world. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you will have light. And whoever does what is true, come to the light. So Jesus repeatedly asking us to come to the light. And then he says, you are the light. Like a city on hilltop that cannot be hidden. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father. And so it is a very, very spiritual thing for me to do my best to reflect the light of Christ. And just one, as I said, my messages are simple. And one other time, I think I'm missing something. One other time at a Christmas party, a young Hindu came and said, I do not know what Christ was telling all about. And I said, oh, it is very simple. He says, love your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. Then I went on to tell him the story of the Good Samaritan. He really, really appreciated. And then I ended with what Jesus said, go and do likewise. I did talk to him about the spiritual aspect of what Christ was trying to tell us, but I just said the Good Samaritan story and I said, go and do likewise. And he said, oh, that's beautiful. And that's exactly what we are doing here. Whatever Christ wants us to do, we are here to do that. And in many, many ways, we do that in simple ways, complicated ways, heavy duty ways, lighthearted way. But we are here to be, stand behind or stand side by side with people with disability so that bring some comfort and some peace of mind to them, which is sometimes is very elusive, and provide all other physical needs, some of the physical needs that we can afford to do. That is my simple message, and I'm here to go and do my best to support another person with disability. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul, very, very much. Your wise words, the scriptures, the reminder that indeed we should love one another equally, everyone. And that's what we're after. You know, you talked about that, you know, the whole point of coming together, right? Collaborating together, being beacons. That's what it was. When you mentioned about being a beacon on the hill, that's the Beacon Church Collaborative. We're that light on the hill that not only for us, but for everyone else to see, this is how it's done. This is the way we should be doing it. So anyway, thank you guys. I know we're a little bit over our time. Thank you for your patience and thank you for being a part. Hello, Micah, so good to see you. Thank you that you joined us. But yes, very, very much appreciative of everyone coming. Really loved those that are here today that are challenged with disability. You have a voice and you made that voice heard and we loved hearing that as well. So thank you for being a part. Remember October the 24th, please mark it on your calendar. Anna and I will continue with promoting and giving you information and making materials available. But gosh, we really, really want you to be a part of it. It will be a phenomenal time.
Well, since this will be my first year, I just was wondering, does it cost money or?
I'll send all that information out. But yes, there is a fee only to cover lunch because we like to
Okay.
provide a really good lunch. So yes, I will put that out. But it's really minimal, Jessica. We try to make that as a minimal cost as possible, just so we can at least. I'm not going to feed you McDonald's burgers, okay? I promise, or chicken
Good, because
McNuggets.
I'm allergic to
We're going to have something better
And
than that.
we always have a few meal options, so if you have dietary restrictions, there'll be a few things to choose between.
But we like it to be a really good lunch. We like it to really
Great,
enjoy.
great to see Artis and Crystal. Thank you all for being there.
Yes, thank you as well. All right, guys, we're
James,
going to close in
James
prayer.
Pepper. Jackie, who is James Pepper? I see James Pepper on the
Yeah,
screen.
well, I know him as Micah. So that is Micah that you see. He is with Woven Church, and he has been engaging with Bridge, has done some of our Bridging Hearts bags. He and his wife, a group of from their church, went and did Easter, right? I think, Micah, it was Easter when you all did that, and went back, of course, and continued to outreach to the adult family home. So they're a church that's a newer engagement for us, but
Great.
so,
Nice
so loving
to
their
meet you.
passion for it.
Nice to meet you, James. Thanks.
Yeah, that's me.
Micah.
Yeah. Micah, yeah, I gotta get in there and change that. It's my
When I
default.
saw him, I said, "Who's James?" I said, "That's Micah."
Yeah.
Righty, guys, we're going to conclude in a prayer time. Let me close us in prayer if we could, so we can go on about our day. Thank you again so much for being a part of this meeting and your voices, everything you had to share, just phenomenal. Thank you, thank you. Lord, we thank you so much for our time spent together. We thank you, Father, that our ears, our minds, our hearts are open. Father, we know that you have created all people beautiful and in your image. And I pray that we will go out amongst communities and embrace people as Jesus intended and as you intended when you sent your son to show us the way. May we continue, Lord, to learn to be a faith inclusive community where everyone is loved just as they are. May we be that beacon on the hill, Lord, where our light shines and we show the way. Bless each person here today richly, abundantly, more than could ever ask or imagine. Protect them as they go about the rest of their responsibilities this week. In Jesus' name, amen. All
Amen.
righty, everyone. Okay, a pleasure, a pleasure.